left-handedness always brings up that concept of using the right hemisphere of the brain, and therefore brings up the notion of creativity. And it's true that the right hemisphere governs the creative tasks, the non-linear tasks, things that are intuitive, muscle coordination and speed, mathematics as well. It's true that a left-handed person from the time they're born have to deal with a right-handed world, and therefore they have to come up with their own solutions to a variety of problems, which are not necessarily problems, but simply things that are designed to be done in a way that's not natural to them. And I think that that exercises their mental flexibility and also their physical flexibility to become more dexterous and agile, perhaps, because they have to deal with things in ways that don't come easily to them. And I think that's overcoming that challenge all the time on a daily basis that probably gives left-handed people what is generally referred to as a more creative approach. Well, of course, it had nothing to do at all with my being left-handed and playing guitar.
Jumbo.
I didn't want to make a connection with other instruments, but I soon realized that there wasn't much to say, because even though you do find left-handed clarinets, for example, and there are even such things as left-handed pianos, though they're extremely rare, by and large, with other instruments, you don't have the same situation that you have on a guitar. On a guitar, the two hands are doing two extremely separate tasks. With reeds, for example, you don't have as distinct a separation between the two hands. Even on the piano, even though the left hand is usually assigned to bass notes and the right goes with the melodic notes or the treble, both hands work in the same direction and following the same technique. Whereas on a guitar, one hand is thrumming or picking, while the other hand is fretting, which is totally different.
What are hands to music?
That's a trick question. Your question makes me think of the connection that we have between our heart and our music. A musician connects with his instruments through his hands, and the hands are, you could say, the pathway from the heart to the instrument, which brings an interesting point which some players have made, and that is that their left hand is the closest one to their heart. So I think the hand is that to music, is that connection to one's emotion. A right-hander will have much better sense of rhythm in his right hand than in his left hand. But also the nuances and the finesse, the attack that you have on the strings is preferably done with one's better hand. That's where we have the most refined touch. And that's why a right-handed person strums or picks with his right hand. What happens to people that are forced to play in the way that's not natural to them is they might actually do okay. Some of them do brilliantly because they're more ambidextrous or because their sense of rhythm is so strong that they're able to do it with either hand. Drummers, of course, are a good example because they have to become very ambidextrous. With people that are so strongly left-handed, as many right-handers are right-handed, in their case, learning to play right-handed can become a total obstacle later on in the learning curve, meaning that after they start playing, they realize at some point that they can no longer progress because they're not able to get over the fact that they can't get better rhythmically or in terms of their picking abilities. And I know a number of examples of people that have this problem. And of course, no one talks about them because they're not known by the simple fact that they have to stop. The thing about guitar, I mean, as opposed to choosing drummers, for example, is that the guitar is obviously the icon of popular music and has been for the last 70 years. It's the most personalizable instrument in the sense that you can tune it, string it, shape it, play it any way you want. Jimi Hendrix reversed the strings, which meant that he played guitar the way that a right-handed person does. It's just a mirror image. On the other hand, no pun intended, he drew quite a lot, and he wrote with his right hand, which few people realize. This was because he was made to do so at school, and that added strength to his right hand, which he used for fretting.
Can you hear a left-handed guitarist?
The answer to the question would be no. However, a lot of left-handed people play upside down. In other words, they take a right-handed guitar and flip it the other way, and then the strings are in the reverse order. In other words, the treble strings are at top and the bass strings are at bottom. Because of that, sometimes people say a left-handed person sounds special. Jimi Hendrix did not play upside down. However, what he did do, he has reversed the string. So by flipping a right-handed string faster with left-handed stringing, the vibrato arm is now on the wrong side. The nut was replaced, changed the intonation, and the screws on each side. Bridge pickup was slanted the other way. Bass strings were sounding brighter. Treble strings were sounding darker. Holes on the pickups were staggered the opposite way. The tension on the strings was also reversed. Tuning machines, you had the high E going to the farthest hole of the headstock. Are you following me?
Am I following you? I have to say this, that I'm a left-hander myself, but I think I really have some left-right confusion. So.
But I must apologize. I realized that I flipped myself around as I was telling you about this, the post on the headstock. It's the reverse, the low E going to the farthest pole. It's just an error in it.
Otis Rush also played a left-hander Fender Stratocaster strung for right hand.
Otis Rush plays upside down. However, as he became more well-known and therefore also a bit richer, he was able to afford proper left-handed instruments. Albert King was playing also upside down, just like Otis Rush. Both of these players, Albert King and Otis Rush, are typified, you could say, by their very powerful vibratos and deep bends. Especially in the case of Albert King, he has these very powerful bends. That's something where upside-down playing gives you an advantage, because the treble strings being at the top end of your neck, you're pulling them down, and you have your whole hand pulling the string down, which is much easier. That's why upside-down players have very strong vibratos and can make very, very long bends.
And this is very much associated with a kind of blues rhythm, isn't it?
Absolutely. So it's an interesting thing to notice that some upside-down players have invented, you might say, certain ways of playing that right-handed people or proper, strong left-handed people have tried to imitate, but which were specific to the fact that they were playing upside-down. And it's interesting to note that the vast majority of left-handed blues players play upside-down. When I was talking about people who play upside down and have defined a certain style and been copied by people who don't play upside down, Elizabeth Cotton is certainly one of, if not the prime example. People refer to cotton picking. She was finger picking that little folk genre, which you can hear on Freight Train, for example, and many other of her songs. She's playing upside down. Curiously, because she's using the thumb to play the treble strings and the index and big finger to do the bass. Elizabeth Cotton had been discovered by Mike Seeger's mother, and she started working for the family, taking care of the house and helping raise the children, Mike and his sister. She had, if you wish, been a link to turn of the century folk tunes and the very start of blues. Then she had left that aside in a closet, as it were. And then in the 50s, encouraged by the Seegers, she took the guitar and started playing songs, some of which she remembered from her childhood, others she invented, And although they're her own original songs, many of them have a style, even melodic aspects, which harken back to those old turn-of-the-century folk songs.
I had begun to write down Freight Train as traditional, and then I looked again and saw that Elizabeth Cotton is actually credited as composing.
Yes, that's what I meant by even her own compositions having an air that seems to be drawn from the 1900s, 1910s, 1920s. So she was like a time capsule brought back to life.